Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 340. I'm Brian Cohen from the 5-Day Amazon Ad Profit Challenge, joined by H. Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, how is life by you?
Life is great, Brian. I couldn't ask for any better.
Oh, well, that's good. I am so happy that life...
How is your life?
My life is okay. We have another person on this podcast today.
What?
I know, right? I know. We have fantastic, I believe, six-figure romance author Inez Johnson, who's a friend of the show, has been listening to the show for a long time.
Since the third episode. Live. Right? Yes. Biggest fan. Biggest fan. Thank you.
I feel that. That's amazing. Well, thank you. And you are a speaker at Self Publishing Live, and you were incredible. And
thank you.
I loved that talk. Oh, you're welcome. And here's the great thing. My mic has not been working 100% today. But here's the wonderful thing. I'm only going to be here for like a few minutes.
Thanks,
you two
Brian.
Are kicking me out. While you take charge, because the show is going to be so much better with you. I just had like a couple things I wanted to say, but Inez, how are you today?
I am fantastic. I'm taking what I call a break. And when I take a writer's break, it just means that I sit and I plot all day, but I'm typically up at 6 and writing until about lunch. And then I go for long walks. But yeah, I'm just laying around plotting all day and it's glorious.
That feels fantastic. Mm-hmm. I had a similar kind of day. It wasn't plotting, but I actually went to a hotel room on Friday early morning and did all my work there. That day, I was really focused on a particular project. It felt really good to be so zeroed in on one particular thing because, yeah, usually it is not that case. Today has already felt like I'm a ping pong ball, but that sounds... like such a wonderful vacation.
I love plotting. Yes. I love plotting until I have to write it. And then I love to write it until I have to edit it. You know how the cycle goes.
I've heard of this. I've heard of this cycle. I felt it deep down. Well, I'm so glad that you were able to join us today and that you two are going to knock it out of the park. I have one thing to announce, but Inez, do you have anything cool you want to share? I know you have an awesome YouTube channel that a lot of our authors would enjoy.
Oh, yeah. Come hang out with me on YouTube. I'm in the fourth quarter push. So I am head down in these manuscripts right now. I'm not sure when I'm going to be updating. But everything that I have been doing for the last two quarters, you can go over there and take a look and see if you can take away any tidbits for your own career.
Awesome. And do they just search Inez Johnson? Or?
Yeah, I'm the only one. As far as I know.
That's awesome. Very cool. Thank you. Claire, anything going on this week you want to share?
Well, I also have a YouTube video up, just one. I'm not doing the whole channel yet, but I had something that I really wanted to say. And so I am starting to build out some YouTube stuff. But this one is about Enneagram and healthy societies and using that for your story world. So talking about basically each of the types and why each one is awesome and necessary and valuable, and how when a society values or devalues one, what kind of problems arise from that. And so you can kind of build out your story world that way. So that was fun. It was just a fun little Friday project because I was just not into the deep work mindset on Friday. And so I thought, you know, I'll do something else productive that my energy is flowing to. So that is up there. I think you can just search FFS Media, but you can also join my email list because I send it out to my email list and I just do fun, free little things and send them out. So
I love how it's like two different directions on something. It's like there's the deep work, and then when the brain is not letting deep work happen, it's like, well, let's do the fun work. And yeah, like the work that's headed in the direction of where our brains actually are. So
yeah, entire months that I'm like, deep work, yes. I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to make videos. I don't want to have a presence. And then, I mean, yeah. And as you're nodding along.
I'm nodding my head. Yes, I completely feel you on that 100%.
Oh, that is so awesome. I mean, you just got to go with your brain. And my announcement, I've already announced before, but the 5-day Amazon Ad Profit Challenge begins on Monday. I hope there are thousands of people saying woohoo as well, as we have about 6,400 people registered so far.
Wow.
It's going to be a big crowd. If you're not yet registered, sellingforauthors.com/October. We're doing multi-book ads, which we haven't really covered deeply, and international ads, which people keep doing anyway, even though I say don't do them. So I guess I'm covering it so that nobody shoots themselves in the foot. It's going to be a blast. We always have about 30 people running support during these events so that everybody gets their questions answered. It's going to be a ton of fun. I hope you can make it, even if you've done it before. There's some people who've done every single challenge that we've ever done, which is super cool.
Well, the multi-book is a game changer. Yeah, I'm sure people will come back for that.
I was running multi-book ads for a client who has a large backlist, just very large backlist. And she'd had people run ads for her before at just these sky-high bids. And I'm not really sure exactly, like I have an idea of what their strategy was, but instead I had her go with low bid, 35 cents, and just throw all of her relevant books into the same ad. And that ad just, like, it's rare that an ad looks profitable on the ad dashboard unless it's really, really killing it. And this ad was like under 70% ACOS, over 20,000 pages read, tracked. This ad was just taking off. And it's like, yeah, that's what happens when you have like 8 series starters in your genre.
Series for the win.
It is a nice place to be. So we'll cover that. sellingforauthors.com/October. I'm jealous. You two are going to have such a fun show
without me.
And I can't wait to listen to it. I will leave y'all to it. Thanks for covering for me. I'll talk to you next week, Claire.
Yeah. Yeah. Hope you make it out of that well. Okay.
Thank you. Bye, y'all.
See you, Brian.
I guess we should get into it. So we have a winner for the Best Page Forward book description this week. That is Patrick O'Donnell is our winner. Patrick, just to hit up Brian, get that free book description, make him do some work for you. And congratulations. Okay, so let's go into the featured patrons. And these are people who have supported the Sell More Books show, which I'll talk about a little bit more later, but we have 3 delicious book descriptions. And as I'll let you read this first one.
We have How to Sex Your Snake by Melissa Banzak. A pool of blood, a missing body, a famous brother accused of murder. June Nash has the worst luck. When she stumbles onto a clue, she's forced to turn to the one person who can prove her brother's innocence, her arch nemesis. Just one problem. Somebody wants that guy dead. Now she's caught in a race against time as they navigate creepy.
Then we have our second patron, John Auerbach, Guild of Tokens. She wants to level up her humdrum existence, but her next quest could spell life or death. Jen Jacobs' nights are spent traversing a strange city, finding hidden objects, slaying dragons, and tangling with a host of fellow adventurers. And her days are spent counting down the seconds until she can return to the grind and continue racking up tokens and leveling up. Except Jen isn't playing a video game. It's all real and happening right in New York City. That's Guild of Tokens.
And then last, we have Evie Jones, How to Publish a Children's Book. Have you always wanted to write a children's book, but thought you couldn't? Or maybe it's already written, but you don't know where to go from here. Are you looking for a blueprint that can guide you from story idea all the way to published book without feeling lost and overwhelmed, even if you don't have much time? In How to Publish a Children's Book, Why Evie Jones outlines the precise path to fulfilling your dream of becoming a published children's book author, you'll find everything you need to know to write, illustrate, publish, and market your paperback and ebook. That's How to Publish a Children's Book by Evie Jones.
Wonderful. You're so good at reading that.
I have kids.
Okay, so let's look at the question of the week from last week. So the question of the week was, looking back, what was the best use of your marketing time during your first year publishing? So Anne Marie said, for my first book in 2015, which was nonfiction, I relied on the customers' connections from my existing business, which was related. Thank you for another great show. Oh, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening, Anne Marie.
So Roland said, mailing list and ARC team. Our first book was in 2012. And while we had a mailing list even back then, it was still small. My wife, co-author, and I were semi-big in the fitness industry and were able to form what would today be called an ARC team filled with fitness pros and enthusiasts. They helped get our book a lot of reviews, sales, and bestseller screenshots.
All right. I was hoping he was using the royal we, but I guess Roland was talking. Pocket McGee said, I know the right answer is build an email list, but for my first book launch, I really focused on in-person events. I almost said physical events, but that would be a different kind of launch. I booked an event at a coffee shop where I'd worked on the book, and I hired a coworker to film my author reading and the evening's other events, a 1920s jazz band and a freaky stage magician, both of which aligned with the book's characters and time period. I edited those videos and posted them on the worldwide intertubes. Long after the drumbeat strains of the night refrains had Lindy hopped into the dusts of time, I still have those video assets for ongoing promotion. My point is, build an email list.
I agree with that final point there, build an email list.
I mean, it sounds like a good time, you know, and sometimes you just got to celebrate, you know, make sure you have your expectations aligned with the possible results. But I thought a book release party, it was fun.
Yeah, we don't always get sales from book release
parties. No, it can't be about that. But if you want to have a 1920s jazz band show up, hey, and freaky stage magicians, that's the thing. I want to know how you make a stage magician freakier to the point where you need to use that adjective.
But no.
Maybe I don't want to know. What would you say, Inez, was the best thing you did your first year?
So the best thing, I made so many mistakes. If you were there listening to my presentation during the conference, you would have heard about all the mistakes that I made. But what I did right, and it took me a while to do this right, was I started learning, I started paying attention, and I started asking questions. I feel like a lot of times when you're brand new and once you get over that whole everything's going to be amazing, everybody's going to buy my book, once you get over that, then you start looking around for the right, for who's doing the right thing and who's making the money. But if you don't take the time to ask why and evaluate what that person is doing, and then to turn it back on yourself and your book and your audience, that's where a lot of people fall short. They don't turn it back on themselves.
From what I know of you, you are a big time learner. You are just, give me all of the information.
So you must have too many degrees.
Yeah. You know, so you must have good filters. So you must have a clear strategy that you filter all that information through. Is that right?
That is right. I'm open to trying things. I'm very open to trying the new things that I see. But now that I have really figured out where my audience is, I have on a funnel glasses. And I know that if something isn't going to come into my funnel, if my audience isn't going to be there, I can't. Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. Not enough time.
Absolutely. There's so much to do. And that's like, my heart goes out to people who don't have a clear strategy and a clear vision yet. But once you get that, you can get those quick no's out. Like, nope, not for me. Yep. Nope, not for me.
Maybe it's the learning to say no.
That's a good life skill.
I would agree.
Well, that's great. Thanks so much for sharing that. We can jump into the tips.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Amazon dominates. Amazon just took another step towards complete dominance of the book market supply chain, reports Nate Hopfelder on the Digital Reader. In addition to creating your files for Kindle eBooks, Amazon's Kindle Create can now also create the files you need to create a print edition for KDP Print. Amazon's recent KDP newsletter states the updated version of Kindle Create can produce an ebook and paperback of any trim size, including handling margins, page numbers, left-right side page layouts, windows and orphans, drop caps, and images. As Holfelder points out, unlike services like Drafted Digital, these output files are proprietary to Amazon and cannot be uploaded to other platforms.
So this is interesting. Do you think that this is something that you would use, or do you already have a pretty good formatting process?
I'm shaking my head. No, I am wide. I'm very committed to wide. So that whole idea of non-proprietary, that stopped me. I can say no. I see it and I say no. That stopped me in my tracks right there. And I'm someone who knows InDesign. I learned InDesign when I first got started. It's a lot to work with. It would take me a weekend to produce a paperback. And then I got Vellum, and now I bow down to the Vellum gods. And no, unless I was doing something super fancy, like my daughter's a poet. She just wrote a poetry book and I taught her InDesign. She needed to do InDesign for that because she had all kinds of stuff. But that wouldn't work for her because she wanted to go wide too. If you are just an Amazon seller, this might work for you. But if you are looking to go wide, I would say, you know, look at some other stuff as well.
Yeah, I think Vellum is one of the best investments I've made.
Best.
I mean, that, like, you know, the Vellum with the unlimited, I don't know if they still do the limited package anymore. That is amazing. It makes everything so easy, especially when you are going wide. To just be able to export to all the different formats and all the different links and everything. We are not sponsored by Vellum. We're just rolling.
We just love them.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, Amazon comes out with these products to make it easier, but I've never found it easier. So yeah, I don't know who this is intended for. Maybe the one-time author, the more like vanity project
type thing.
Not necessarily I want to push a book to like what Roland was doing to help promote his business, because you want a really high quality professional product for that. But someone who just wants to write a book and doesn't want to, you know, go too into it. And I don't know if those people are listening to the Sell More Book Show, but maybe. I know some people who don't have Vellum, right? Because Vellum doesn't work on PCs, I don't believe. You can just make friends and say, hey, will you format this in Vellum? I'll pay you $25 or whatever, you know? And that is a really good option. All right, let's look at this next one. This is the whole package. Looking for a way to sell books directly? Why not try Etsy? Author Melissa Harold was already selling her hair and herbal products on Etsy when she decided to add her fantasy novels to her store as well. Quote, Etsy is a fantastic marketplace where its customers believe in supporting independent artists. This makes it a great fit for indie published authors, says Harold. Because Etsy is not a book marketplace, it's important to think of things a little differently. At its heart, Etsy is a gift purchasing and self-indulgence marketplace, the author says. That means you can reach buyers you'd never find elsewhere, but it also means marketing differently. On Etsy, killer photos of your physical book, along with how it's going to be packaged and presented, are as important as the cover alone is on Amazon. Like any store, you have to optimize your listing with great descriptions, keywords, and phrases to optimize your Etsy SEO, along with the right price. While you will have to package and ship your book, Etsy handles the payment processing for you. Harold recommends focusing on the idea that your book is a gift, even if the person bought it for themselves. Many Etsy buyers appreciate whatever they buy, even a book, be packaged in a thoughtful, artistic way. This is interesting. A little side door into indie publishing. What do you think about this?
I think this would make sense for super fans. I think this would definitely make sense for nonfiction. It's not something that I would immediately do because I have very niche readers. And those readers that Melissa was talking about, the self-care and buying something as a gift or buying something for yourself or for somebody else. Well, I know that the products that I create, readers are buying it for themselves, for their self-care, for their downtime. And they're probably going to be looking for it on Goodreads or on Amazon or one of those platforms. So they're going to go there and click the buy. So coming to Etsy when they might be looking for soaps or nice mugs, I don't think that would work. But again, I think this could work if you were selling to your super fans and you were packaging your book up, making it look all nice. Yeah, I think that would work out.
Absolutely. Especially if you have some swag with it, you know, like maybe, cause I know a lot of authors who are also very crafty. So
yeah.
You know, maybe you have a cozy mystery where it does have to do with soaps or something, right? You're selling soaps,
great,
you're also selling a book that takes place in a soap shop or something. You could package those and that would be a really fun, cute thing. And you would maybe get your book into new hands and you're not necessarily targeting readers though, right? So you may get those people who read one or two books a year and you may be one of those books.
Yeah.
Or you may get them hooked. It's an interesting idea if you're already doing other products, but I can't imagine that just selling books is going to be, you know, it has to be tied to something else. And so you're kind of sliding in like, oh, by the way, here's a book that goes with it. And then you're creating kind of that experience, which is fun.
I completely agree with that. So next up, we have Facebook follies. Are your Facebook ads getting clicks, but no sales? There can be dozens of reasons why people might click on your ads, but not buy, says Readsy's Ricardo Fayette in his latest marketing tips newsletter. Most of the time, it'll be a combination of a cover that's not right, a blurb that doesn't grab readers, not enough reviews, price, or that you're simply not advertising to the right people. These problems are not unique to Facebook ads. It's just that Facebook magnifies them by optimizing for clicks. By running ads straight to your book page, you can only run what Facebook calls traffic campaigns, which aim at getting your ads the highest number of clicks. Facebook will focus on getting lots of clicks on your ads at the lowest cost, says Fayette. And that's whether they are likely to buy a book or not. If you're getting lots of clicks but no sales, go back to the drawing board and try to figure out what might be stopping people who show interest in your book on Facebook from buying it. Run tests, Fayette says. Change your cover, blurb, price, and monitor the effects, Fayette says. He'll be teaching how to stop Facebook from optimizing for clicks in next week's email. So sign up to readsy.com.
That's interesting. Do you run Facebook ads?
My business runs on Facebook ads. Facebook ads in my newsletter. Yes.
All right. So what's your experience with this sort of dilemma?
So I optimize for clicks. I'm not saying Spanish Jesus is wrong at all. Would never say that. I take a little bit of a different kind of a sideways approach to this. I want the clicks because I know not everybody's going to make my ad so that someone will stop scrolling and click and be like, what's this? And if I can get them to stop and scroll and maybe they don't buy on that first thing, that's fine. Because guess what? Once they click, I've captured a warm audience that I can retarget. So that's my goal immediately with Facebook is to get someone to stop and click and want to see at least what's happening. And then I take that audience of clickers and I retarget them with a different ad. But he is right. If your goal is to, with that first ad, to get them to click and to buy, 100% listen to what he's saying. See how we've been talking about strategy? And it's going to depend on what your strategy is. My strategy is slightly different. If they don't buy the first one, it's okay. I'm going to try and get them the second time I hit them.
Yeah. So it seems like your strategy is a little bit more advanced in that it's multi-step, right? It's not just if they don't click, buy, right? Like not B-U-Y, but like B-Y-E, buy. And yours
that's is so clever
with the retargeting. So you have a more sophisticated Facebook ads, you know, you're using more sophisticated tactics on Facebook ads.
I like to think so. Thank you for saying that. I'm taking that. Yes. I'm a sophisticated Facebook user.
Listen, I am not a sophisticated Facebook user. I don't understand any of it. I'm like retargeting. That sounds really smart. Don't really know the next step in that. Yeah. So it may be that if it is not working, one of the strategies would be to learn about retargeting. And I assume you use pixels and all that for it.
You can, but you actually don't have to. If anybody who clicks on your ad, Facebook will save them and you just have to go and grab them. They save them for 365 days.
Well, isn't that fancy?
It is.
That's great. You heard it here first, kids. You probably didn't hear it first. I heard it here first. Okay. Anything else on that story?
Sign up for Carter's talk. I bet he's going to teach so many amazing things. And then if you can't figure it out and people are still clicking, then learn to retarget.
Good advice. So that brings us to the news, the top five news stories of the week. Ooh, I'm so excited.
It's time for the Sell More Book Show top five news. Number five.
Oh no, our books are too popular. Publishers are once again starting to worry over the increasing popularity of library ebooks, reports Telereads' Chris Meadows. Distributor Overdrive reports library ebook checkouts are up by 52% over the last year, while Hoopla reports that 439 new library books in the US and Canada have joined the service since March, boosting their membership by 20%. Quote, And of course, this worries publishers, says Meadows, who fear that these easy book checkouts are cutting into their book sales. At the same time, libraries have to pay several times the cover price for ebooks that expire and must be bought again. Now, the House Antitrust Subcommittee has launched an investigation into unfair practices and competition in the digital marketplace. Library administrators are suggesting a new fair pricing model, which would be to charge the cover price for a library ebook and limit it to 30 to 35 lendings, the average lifespan of a hardcover book. All right, another library story. I see you shaking your head.
I have so many thoughts about this.
Well, now's the time to air them. Air your grievances.
One, because libraries raised me, and I think libraries raised a lot of people, not in this just this country, but all over the place. And I sometimes just get frustrated because I don't think that people think about libraries. I don't think that Bezos thought about libraries when he instituted KU. I don't think a lot of these subscription services are thinking about libraries, and I think libraries are just so vital. I also think that buyers and borrowers are different people. I 100% do both. During this time of COVID, my library sales are up because my library is closed. My library system is a huge part of my community. When I moved, wherever I've moved, one of my needs was I have to be walking distance to a library, and I can go in either direction and I'm equidistant to a library. We got those little library mailboxes. This is a community that thrives on libraries. So we can't go into the library right now, but libraries have bent over backwards to make books available so that people can read. If we didn't have readers in this industry, we wouldn't be making money. I have no problem that if my book is out for free, as long as it's not being pirated. So my sales are up because people are stuck at home, and what do they do? They're discovering ebooks for the first time. Because sure as heck, my nose was turned up for the longest time about e-readers until there was a book that I couldn't read because it wasn't in print, and I went and I got an e-reader. So there's that. But not only are borrowers and buyers different, like I said, I do both. I will buy a book if I want it so bad, but also because I never, ever, ever am under my book budget, ever, I will, the first thing that I do, I even have a little library extension. I will go and see if the book is available in my local library. A lot of times it is available. Even some indie books are available. But here's the thing, Claire, if I go and I go into my library app and I have Libby, I have Overdrive, I have Hoopla. If I go in there and the book has like 10 people waiting, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go buy that book. So I just think that I don't agree with publishers. I don't agree with their mindset that this is hurting them. I don't agree at all, because not everybody can pay like a $20 fee for a book that just got released, that they're dying to read. People are going to try to consume the books as soon as they can. So I just don't think it's hurting them. And I think it'll hurt the libraries more.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see libraries as a business. I see it as national infrastructure. And so I don't necessarily think it's just part of it. I mean, there has to be sort of that respect and trust between readers and authors, that if you like the book, you'll support me. And I trust you to read these books at the library, and that's fine. Like, if I didn't find joy in people reading my work, I wouldn't be a writer.
I'm so with you.
1,000 other ways to make so much more money.
Yep.
You know, so, yep. But these big publishers, not to just, you know, dismiss them, but 100% agree with you. They're looking at this the wrong way, because these are two different things. These are buyers. And some people start out as library borrowers and become buyers. I do the same thing. If I listen to an audiobook from the library that I just love, I go, oh, I want to own that. I want same. To have it so I can push it on people physically.
Same.
But I don't have the budget to buy 20 audiobooks a month. I would love to, but I don't.
I'm not supposed to.
I know. But yeah, it's just people getting joy out of your work. They're going to tell people about it. And it's just sort of this, you know, background noise of enjoyment to the things that you're producing. And that's with the library. And the same thing. I mean, we didn't have a huge book budget growing up. We spent a lot of time at the library. It's an important place. You have to get people to love reading before you can sell them books. Yes. So
yeah, preaching to the choir.
Right. Two teachers talking about this really irks me. That we're even dealing with, like,
we are
the House Antitrust Subcommittee on this. Mm. They don't have anything else to be worrying about.
Me neither.
All right. Well, let's go to number 4.
Number 4.
Indies need not apply. 10 years after self-publishing took off in the UK, the bookseller still excludes indie authors from its awards, says Mark Williams of the New Publishing Standard. The bookseller has referred to indie books as penny dreadfuls, down market, and poorly edited, even as traditionally published books with similar problems are ignored. Speaking out of both sides of their mouth, the bookseller came to the defense of indies as far back as 2012 when they said, "For years, the publishing industry has ignored self-publishing. It's little wonder so many of them seem pissed off with publishers." But flash forward to 2020 and the bookseller's YA Book Prize, whose rules say submissions are only accepted from publishing houses. Just in case you have any doubt about what that means, the bookseller spells it out. Self-published books are not eligible.
I love it when Roland throws a little bit of shade in these, right?
There was so much shade.
Yeah. Thanks, Roland. Mm-hmm. I need this in my life right now. Penny dreadfuls. That's
right.
Right. But I think there is a sort of this reality of being an indie that some books do not get the attention they deserve in the editing process and the writing process. But to some extent, the quality will rise to the top.
Yeah. And
I think that is what generally happens. But to just completely dismiss indies out of hand is like,
You know, part of me wants to just kind of shrug it off and be like, you know what, indies, go count your money all the way to the bank. But I just feel like, you know what, sometimes, you know, there's these beautiful ads going around, like, you can sit with us. I love those ads, like where the little girl with the juice pouch, where she's like, hold my pouch, and she pushes the lunch tables together. That's what I feel when I look at this. I'm like, okay, we need not apply. That's fine. Let's go and be inclusive on our own. Let's build our own. We've built a whole new industry. Absolutely. So we need to celebrate ourselves.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I don't care about prizes, winning writing prizes. Those Me don't either. Pay my electricity bill.
Right.
And, you know, I think that we have created as indies such a strong, thriving environment. I mean, there are still challenges. It's not that every single person who comes here is going to make a bunch of money, but we've created an environment where traditionally published authors are going, oh, I want to be with these guys.
Right. You can sit with us.
Yes, exactly. And so it's like, you know, once you can kind of get over that need for the external validation of awards, there's a whole world out there. And I know there are some, you know, people listening who are traditionally published or hybrid. And as long as you know why you're with that, you know, your publisher, that's fine by me. But I just think if you can write a book, like, why would you give it to someone else who may or may not market it?
Reasons, but
yeah, I mean, give it a shot. You can go hybrid. You can do all these things. You know, it's fun. And everyone here is helpful for the most part.
For the most part.
Yeah. You can pick out the non-helpful people pretty
good. Yes.
But yeah. It's just, maybe I just love control too much, but
I'm with you. One book that was pulled by a small press and it was very hard for me to back off.
For sure. For yeah. sure. All right, let's get into this next one.
Number three.
Playtime is over. Playster, the unlimited streaming platform for audio and ebooks, has gone bankrupt, reports Michael Kozlowski of Good E-Reader. While Kozlowski said the writing was on the wall, the end came suddenly. Quote, they have removed their apps from Apple and Google Android. The website has been shut down and it looks like it's over. Good E-Reader is reporting that customers are still being billed, but there is no app or site available to stop the subscriptions other than contacting your credit card company. Another one bites the dust. Do you ever use Playster?
I've never used Playster. I think it's really crummy that they're still billing customers. That's really, really crummy. And it's going to leave a really bad taste in people's mouth. You have to be careful because hopefully you have people of place or you have another business venture. But if you do people dirty like this, they're going to remember it. So I hope that they fix that really quickly. I have a love-hate relationship with subscription services. I love them as a consumer, but I don't get the math as a provider and as a creator because I see that you don't get what you value. And I'm looking at a full price book. You don't get that value. And that's bothersome to me because when I do like my profit and loss and the business stuff, all that, you know, I'm looking at selling a certain amount, moving a certain amount of units to get a certain amount of profit. And then if you put your stuff in these subscription services, you have to alter that. And I've just never, as a creator, I've just never gotten it. As a consumer, heck yeah. Netflix all day, Audible's escape is about to go away and I am gorging on all the romance novels that I can before they go away. But this keeps happening. So as a creator, I'm just not for them.
Yeah, I wonder if there is a sustainable subscription situation that both benefits, you know, that is an acceptable price for the consumer and can pay the creator enough money. I don't know. I mean, I know that Kindle Unlimited could easily fix the issue by just saying we're going to pay this amount per page read. And some months they, you know, they may have infused that pot, but rather than making it a zero-sum game of we have this much and so it's going to fluctuate, they could stabilize that and more people would be in KU. Even if that rate was like, you know, lower than what it averages.
Don't come after her, guys.
No, I'm just saying Amazon could do something to fix it because they have those resources outside of Kindle that they can pull from to try and get people, right?
Yeah.
And of course, we already know that when they front the cash for something, eventually that good benefit will go away. But that's how that works. But yeah, I don't know. The subscription, it sounds so good. And it's like Netflix has been running at a loss for a long time. You look at their production budgets and a lot of it, they do just the license and that sort of thing. But that's interesting. It's interesting to see how people are working with that because you end up with this specific number based on the subscriptions, you know, we have X number of money and we're going to have to split it. So the more people who come in who want a piece of it are going to get less and less and less. And then it becomes just toxic.
Yeah.
So sorry to Playster. And if you have subscribed to Playster,
go check
your
credit card company.
Yeah. Yeah. That's bad.
Number two.
Mailer heavy. Have you noticed your email open rates changing? Consider changing up your days and times for 2020. While you could experiment changing your days and times to see what it does for you, MailerLite has done you one better, digging through the 2020 stats from millions of campaigns to help you determine when it's best to click send. So, when is the best time to send an email? While each audience is different, MailerLite data shows that, in general, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays and Fridays don't show much difference, and that 11 a.m. local time seems to be a good place to start. On the other hand, since the volume of email is much lower on the weekends, you have a chance to stand out on a Saturday or Sunday. The general consensus, says MailerLite COO Ilma Nosdate, is that the worst time to send an email is between 9 p.m. and 9 p.m., when subscribers are winding down for the evening, sleeping, and then rushing to get ready for the new day. Hat tip to author Frances Caballo for sharing the blog post in her weekly newsletter. Can I just say that I'm so excited that I just got to do number two, because I've been listening since the third week. And like Jim, I am a 12-year-old boy. Number two.
You did great.
Thank you.
You did it justice. Okay. So mailer heavy. Let's talk about this sending. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your email strategy.
So I am one of the dinosaurs, I guess, that still uses MailChimp, and I have no complaints whatsoever about it. And they have a feature where they look at my audience and they look at the habits of that audience, and I can ask it to suggest the best time based upon that particular audience's habits. And that works well for me. And I can see the different rates of when people are opening. Beyond that, here's what I've done. I've set my readers' expectations. I have three different pen names. So they know that they're going to get an email from Ines on Tuesday, sometime around lunchtime. That's going to happen. They know that they're going to get an email from Shanae, two totally different audiences. Shanae is my sweet pen name. They know they're going to get an email from Shanae on Wednesdays around a certain time too. I didn't do that based upon when was the best time that they were going to, but I did the dates, guys. I did the dates because I've looked at my sales and I saw that Ines's sales were always dipping on Tuesdays. And I saw that Shanae's royalties were always dipping on Wednesdays. So I made that decision because based on sales data of my readers. And then I let MailChimp figure out when's the best time to get them to open.
That is so smart. Probably a lot of people listening to this are going, well, doy, like, why didn't you think of that? Right? Because every time I send an email, I see an uptick in sales because you're just reminding your audience, hey, I'm here. right? Yep. It's a very distracting world we live in. Here's a book that is super smart. I know that whenever I'm selling anything, I will send it during the week. But for my humor list, I send them stories. So I said, this is very much like, here's a saga. I sent them one about, I think it was the HOA that I've been trying to start a war with, you know, little things like that, that my humor list loves. They love it when I get belligerent. So if I type up something like that and I'm not selling, I don't have anything to sell, I'll send those on the weekends because I'm like, this is a weekend read, right? Mm-hmm. So they know they need a little bit of time. These are long emails. These are things that people will sit and enjoy and take about 30 minutes to read through. And so it's more like an essay. So I give those on the weekends and then I get my selling stuff during the week.
That's smart.
That's my own anecdotal thing of like, I don't want to read long stuff during the week because I'm a chicken with my head cut off. But on the weekends, I'm like, yeah, I'll take a break, read it while I'm drinking my coffee or something out on the patio, something a little slower that you can just kind of promise that it'll be fun. It'll be an experience.
We are two smart ladies.
If only I could actually do it with any regularity like you do. All right. Anything else on this mail strategy?
Look and see if your mail, your newsletter service has something similar and see what it is that they say. But also, guys, you have to look at open rates of your particular subscriber base. If this is going to lend to sales, you need to look at your sales trends too and see when they're buying things.
Yes. Yes. Get that data. Mm-hmm. So for someone who's just starting out and doesn't have any of that data, what would you recommend?
Look, when I was starting out, I did a post. I think it was last year I did a post. I started publishing at the end of 2014, and I did a post. It was like January something, 2015, and I made 35 cents on a day. And then I did a post like, I think it was 2019 on that same day in January, and I made like $300 on that day. But I have been tracking my sales every day since I started because I wanted to understand whatever I did, if I sent an email, if I tweeted something, if I posted something, if I met someone in the store, what's making these sales happen? So even if it's zero on that day, that's okay. Mental note or write it down and then check again the next day. Mm-hmm.
Right. So you have systems that you use. What kind of stuff do you use? Do you use the KDP dashboard? Do you like your sales dashboards on the different retailers? Do you keep a spreadsheet?
So I'm a planner. I love planning products. I love color pens and pencils and everything like that. But no, I actually have developed a habit. I get up. Some people have morning routines. Part of my morning routine, I get up and I check my sales. I write any ads that I've had in my day planner. And then I look and see how much that ad costs. And then I look and see how much I made. So it's because I do it every day. I don't keep track of it physically like that. It's in my head right now. And I'm tweaking and twisting and turning on the fly. And then at the end of the month, I'll do like a reconciliation, but day by day it works for me.
That's a lot of commitment.
That is a very polite way to say that girl crazy.
You're committed to it.
I'm committed.
That's half the battle. Okay, I'm going to jump us right on into this number one story of the week.
Yay.
And now the number one top five news item.
Join the crowd. Is Amazon dropping the Mobi format? If you've recently updated a Kindle book to your KDP dashboard, you might have noticed that Amazon now recommends using an EPUB file instead of their own proprietary Mobi format. The folks at Vellum are reporting that Mobi files are still supported by Amazon, but that the Kindle platform suggests EPUB standard format when uploading new titles or updating previously published works. While the upload recommendation is new, note that the EPUB format has been supported by KDP for quite some time. So I don't know that this is the top story of the week, but this is a story.
It's a story.
Use Mobi files in here maybe on Amazon. Mm. I've always used been using the EPUB, and it seems to have fewer glitches. So I don't know. I've never had a problem once I uploaded an EPUB file. What about you?
I do whatever Vellum tells me to. If you use Vellum, you can tell it what storefronts you're going to. You can put the links in. You can do all that fun stuff. And I will spit out whatever file I get. And I look in the folder for Amazon and I put that in there. And I've heard people talking about this week. I just have not noticed that it was happening.
Yeah, I've actually noticed that it may be just whatever version of Vellum I'm working on. When Kindle, it has been for a while automatically exporting it as an EPUB.
You're right. It says Kindle EPUB or something like that. You're right. That's why I haven't paid attention.
Yeah, it's all right. It's not, if you don't have to pay attention, that means it's working. So I guess if people are doing it, you know, formatting some other way, EPUB does work across, and then you, especially if you're wide, you can put it across different formats.
Yes, you can. I remember when it was so, I was uploading to Apple in the early days, and it was so frustrating. You get error after error, and it was a nightmare. And yeah, I've never had a problem when I just do what Vellum tells me to do. As you can see, I didn't even realize that the Kindle format was different. I just did what they told me to do.
Thank God for programmers.
True.
Yeah. So I do wonder, though, going back to that other story, if you're going to be formatting in the Kindle Direct Publishing, if it's going to do Mobi or EPUB, or if it doesn't matter because you can't download it and use it anyway because it's proprietary.
That's annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not annoying if you're just publishing on Amazon, but it's annoying if you want to put it up to a library. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we need to come up with a question of the week, but first circle back around because I forgot to mention Patreon. If you want to be a patron of the show, you should find Selmore Book Show on Patreon and you can become a patron and we will read your book description.
Mm-hmm.
We will give it all of the roasting that we can. No, we will help you promote your book to people who are trying to promote books.
Yes.
So you can find us on Patreon. And now to the question of the week. So what's something, Inez, that you have read here that interested you or piqued your, you know, curiosity in some way?
Maybe something along the lines of indies creating their own award and what that might look like.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. I think there are some indie awards, but they're very much the for-profit thing, but I guess that's all awards are technically that. But yeah, indie awards. That's fun. Okay. So a question. You ready for a silly one?
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
If your book was going to win an award category in indie awards, what would you want that category to be?
I love it. Brian's going to be so proud of us.
We're just trying to make him proud. I hope he made it out of that well. Okay. Maybe we should throw him a rope.
Oh.
Okay. Well, that's our question of the week. Any last thoughts?
No, it's been awesome. It was everything I dreamed of all those years ago when I was listening to the third episode. I never imagined I'd be here. It's awesome.
Do you have any wisdom? Brian usually makes me do wisdom.
Oh gosh.
So I'm going to turn around.
Thanks, Claire. I would hearken back to my presentation, which was all about knowing your why. That's what I really feel is why the people who are successful in this industry are. One, they didn't give up. Two, they built a backlist. And three, they sat down and they investigated what they were doing and why it was or was not working, and they tweaked it. I get people asking me questions, but I feel like sometimes they're asking me questions wanting me to tell them their why, and nobody can tell you your why. You have to do that. And as soon as you figure it out, and as soon as you start to put into practice the steps to take to keep your why at the forefront, you're going to start to see success.
That's really good practical wisdom. Thank you. That's way better than the sludge I I'm so glad we had you on.
I'm so glad I was here. I really had a good time.
Joining us.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, wherever you are, he's in a better
place. Wherever you are.
All right, so that's it for this week's show. Thank you guys so much for joining us out there for episode 340. And we hope that you will join Brian and me for next week's episode number 341. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling.